Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
And good evening.
And good night.
And guess what?
What?
Fourth meal.
What's the fourth?
Taco Bell. I'm just doing it.
Just doing it.
I'm just friggin' doing it. I'm going in there, and I'm getting a seven layer right now. Hot sauce.
Hey, 1UP fans. Do you ever do a... We with Bevel? Bevel with us?
Actually, we don't have anyone to mention until midway through the show today.
Oh, okay.
So early on, we can jump right into the podcast.
Nice.
But shout out to Bevel. We love you guys.
Yeah, I like him. Listen, the amount of Juan Epstein fans coming up to me lately and showing me love, I really appreciate it. It's cool.
Thank
because
you.
I'm not on the radio anymore, so now I see like true fans, like Juan Ep fans. And I got a couple road gigs. And I've been running into 1UP fans everywhere, which makes me really realize I wish I hit the road earlier because I was on the radio. You know, when you're on the radio, you can't travel. And we get so much local love, but our 1UP fans are the worldwide fans.
They're everywhere.
So I want to thank everybody that's been coming up to me on the road lately. And
Do you get a lot?
A lot. More than I thought. This kid in Boston that came up to me, which we was in a grimy club, but it was like one of them ratchet clubs, and showed mad love. And then I'm going to D.C. next week. You know Alizé?
DJ Alizé?
Yeah.
But of course.
Yeah. He said you're the homie. So I hit him up about what else is going on down there. He got me a gig right away, instantly. Some hip-hop reggae party.
Damn, I wonder if I guess maybe I should call Alizé one day. I'd be like, yo, but you got Cypher game. He'd be like, what? Sorry, the connection's breaking up.
But he said he was a 1UP fan, and then my boy, I forgot the kid's name.
I never play in D.C. So pathetic.
No? What's that got?
I've played, like, barely at all. But I've done such a terrible job with people thinking I can do a party.
Yeah.
Although, I'm not going to lie. First of all, I'm mad at you twice.
Okay.
Number one, because I would have been excited for you to see my set, I bodied my 45 set this week. I was well prepared. It was a well put together, awesome set.
Huh.
I'm also upset with you because even when you don't show up places, Billy June shows up to everything.
Okay. I wasn't here.
But I didn't even know about it. I know, but it doesn't matter.
How would I have known about it?
Just you got to keep your eye on things because I can't just have Billy June showing up willy-nilly. The guy's insane.
Yeah, you need a filter.
Billy June and I took, and for the second time in a row, gave him a ride back in a cab.
Okay.
We get in the cab and I know he's going to start talking because it's Billy June. So I was in the back seat like, Jesus Christ. So I go on Periscope and I sign and I write on Periscope, Billy June talking about God knows what on my way back from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
5 seconds later, I hear this. Thanks a lot. I'm not talking about God knows what because like, he got the alert on his phone and read it. So I'm like, what's up, Billy June? Come on, I don't even start talking. Wouldn't talk. Wouldn't say anything.
So now you know how to shut him up.
15 minutes later, I'm like, all right, Periscope, good night. So the girl I was with, and just kept, I mean, nonstop. Anyway, sorry, so you were thanking everyone, and you're doing a gig in D.C.
Right, and then now I'm saying, hey, any 1UP fans out there, if you want to book us.
We should do that.
Let's do it. Separately or together. I'm free agent. I'm on the road. I'm going to ask Drew Ha for some gigs once this is all done.
Drew, I want Drew Ha to give me some more gigs too.
I'm loving the road, man. Loving it.
You're enjoying life on the road?
Loving it.
What about your baby? Is your baby upset with you?
Yeah.
She's already like, fuck you, Dad.
Well, I mean, I went and did this party, this World Barbecue, Saturday, 5 to 6. Drove to Boston, did the gig. Slept for like 3 hours, drove right back to go to a wedding.
On Sunday?
Yeah, wedding on Sunday. But I'm doing it, though.
Are you having any nights at home when you have any chill? Do you have any nights a week when you just stay at home? Chill.
No, mornings. No nights. Mornings.
Oh, but your wife's home all the time right now.
Yeah.
So you hang in the morning.
Yeah.
So you'll wake up and you guys will do the friggin', you know.
There's nothing to do.
Stare at the baby.
You stare at the baby, you hold it. You bounce it around till she falls asleep like a heroin addict.
It's in and out of sleep nonstop, huh?
Yeah. Just bounce her around.
Now, have you noticed that you're...
My avoiding the diaper change game is on fleek.
How do you do it? You just walk out? You have a timing pattern? You have a pattern down?
Like, yeah, if I'm holding her and I feel something, I got all this time to take a shower or...
Oh, man,
I lay down... It's getting bad. It's getting bad. I know how to do it. I did it in the beginning. I don't like it.
Oh, really?
And I'm trying to avoid it.
Scythe, you of all people
I don't like shit jokes.
Don't like shit jokes. Won't get a dog because you refuse to pick up shit, even though you like dogs. You think they're nice. Dogs
won't pick up shit.
You're not picking up shit.
Baby's like a dog. A lot of shit.
A lot of shit. I'll be honest. It's human shit. It's grosser. Dog shit's kind of hard and just like sits there and you pick it up in the bag.
Nah.
Human shit, at this age, so I feel it is bad. Just mush.
I feel bad for my wife, but sorry, babe. I'm just clocking these days, like 40-day reset, man. Just clocking the days of not having to change a diaper.
Wow.
I do everything else.
What else is there to do? What else is there to do?
You bounce it. You walk with it.
Well, that's hard.
I got to set up the car seat.
Okay.
I got to set all that. It was rough. Yo, taking a baby to a wedding. My mom was there helping out.
Oof.
And it's like the attention's all on the baby. So it's like you got to like clean her up a little bit.
And do you ever want to say to anyone like, yo, hold on. No disrespect. Yo, fuck this baby. You know, I got a lot going on right now.
Nah.
You never said that?
Nah. It's like the baby keeps the small talk away from me.
Oh, that's right. They just go, oh, go.
She looks like you. Yeah, cool. Sorry. I tell the baby sorry every day.
For looking like you?
Yeah.
How much do you think it got you?
Too much.
Are you serious?
Too much.
I'm being 100% serious. That's bad news.
I know. That's what I said.
Because your wife is an adorable Asian woman.
I know.
And this should not.
It looks like you want to see a Chinese me? Come check out my baby.
Mm. Well, listen, those things do still change over time, though.
I hope so.
We hope all traces of you just fade away.
Oh, gone.
Sort of like the memories of your father who you haven't seen.
Anyway, Mercury's in retrograde.
All right, everyone be careful.
Me and my mom had a huge fucking fight.
Oh, was it bad?
Bad.
What'd she do?
It was just like her sarcasm and her attitude, and I just wasn't going for it.
Wait, you just weren't up for it? I mean, you've been dealing with your whole life.
I know, but now I have the tools to deal with it.
Mm.
And she wasn't feeling it. I apologize. I texted her an apology, but she didn't write back. She's hating on me right now.
Damn, mom's hating on you?
Mom's hating.
I'm gonna reach out to your mom. I like your mom.
That's nice.
Hey guys, our friend Drew Friedman's here today.
Speaking of the road.
Straight to Friedman.
Indirectly, first person to ever put me on the road, Drew Ha.
Because you went out with, hold on. It was, the tour was Black Moon, yep. And you were DJing for a Relativity artist?
Nope.
What label was the artist? Atlantic?
Well, at the time, Loud.
Alcoholics?
No, but they were there.
It was Alcoholics?
I don't even know.
Black Moon, it was a Loud artist? Yeah. Solo?
Wasn't a Loud artist at first, but Solo was a Loud artist.
Oh, yeah. Someone from not Tash.
No.
Hold on. This is really gonna bother me.
East Coast, not West Coast. East Coast.
No Beat Nuts artist went solo on there. Who the fuck?
Come on.
I know we've talked
you
about
know
it.
This.
I know.
It was our tour. It was a
It was a Black Moon tour.
Yeah.
And,
we were on the West Coast because the guy was a Wild Cowboy.
Oh, Sadat X. Sadat X. I forgot.
Sadat X Boot Camp. Alcoholics exhibit.
What a
you
show.
That'd be a good show right now.
You remember that show, bro? Those gigs? Probably not.
Some of them.
Were you out there?
Probably.
Drew was there?
Yeah.
Drew was there all the time.
I used to travel.
I was only there for 2 days. I got fired.
Why'd you get fired again?
I didn't get fired. The label refused to pay for Sadat's DJ.
Which was him.
Yeah.
So you were fired.
Yeah.
Indirectly, though. Not intentionally.
I was like, what do I got to do to stay? They're like, nah.
Just go. You would have paid your own way. So you're like, I would
pay my own way. Yeah.
So Drew Ha.
Yes, sir.
Drew Ha. For people who don't know, you don't listen to this pod. Actually, no. I guess there's probably some younger people who listen.
You don't know. Don't know. He's a behind the scenes guy.
Because you're a behind the scenes guy. So unless you're
I'm old.
You're old as shit.
Yeah.
You're maybe they love Boot Camp but didn't pay attention to everything. But Drew Ha and Buckshot were the heart and soul of the Duck Down Boot Camp movement.
Duck Down Records, Boot Camp was the
click.
Squad, Boot Camp, right? Click.
Boot Camp Click was the crew, right. And Duck Down's the label.
Right.
Originally under Nervous.
Black Moon's first deal was under Nervous. Smith & Wesson's first deal was under Nervous, and then we created Duck Down
as your own, and then you went under Priority.
And then we went under Priority.
So Boot Camp was first.
I have an interview. I know everything about this guy. I don't know what I need to ask.
So Boot Camp Click was first. Because you were saying Boot Camp Click on Black Moon Records.
No. Duck Down, they were probably the same exact time.
Okay.
Because Duck Down created, Duck Down became the label where Boot Camp Click put out their music.
Right.
On the first Black Moon album, you hear some subtle references from Buck about Boot Camp, and then it gets heavy from Smith & Wesson. Smith & Wesson really brought Boot Camp Click to life.
Chuck Chill Out.
Chuck Chill Out brought
so
Black
what, who
Moon.
Are you? Who were you to Drew to Buck back then?
Intern.
Intern for Buck.
Intern for Nervous.
You oh, were an Nervous. Intern for Nervous?
Yes. Oh.
Intern for Nervous.
So Chuck Chill Out comes in. That. Yo, G. Yo. Yo, G. Y'all got a group. We wear backpacks. Yo. Wait, who's the guy who ran Nervous?
Sam Weiss and
Yo, Sam.
Michael Weiss.
Sam, shut the fuck up. I got a group. We wear backpacks. This guy's Shorty. He's Shorty. I'm Buckshot Shorty. Shut the fuck up. I'm Chuck
that,
Chill Out.
That is actually very, really very close and accurate.
You know Chuck Chill Out's name is, it's not Chuck Chill Out. It's Chuck
Yell
dot
out.
Dot dot. Chill Out. No, I'm serious.
It really is?
That's how they gave him that name. It's not because he's chill. He's the opposite of chill. They're telling him to chill, chill out.
I did not know that.
It's Chuck.
News to me.
Dot, like, when you say it, you're supposed to think Chuck, dot, dot, dot. Chill out.
That's insane. And in the background right now, of course, the first thing you ever heard, right, Syfe?
Yes.
Who Got the Proppers? Big old song back in 1993.
Wow.
So they show up. What's your job at Nervous when you first see...
Buckshot.
Buckshot walking the door.
I'm sitting up front because Nervous was probably like the size of this office right here, this studio where we are, and maybe like one office in the back. And I just basically, when you work at a small indie label, you wear multiple hats. So I was an intern, but I also was the radio department. I also was doing retail and video and whatever needed to be done.
And you were how old?
I'm fresh out of college. I'm probably 22.
And so you're doing all this different crap. And did you and Buck just take to each other? Did you feel very passionately about the music? Like, what happened?
So Buck was, he just had a single deal. This record wasn't even out yet. He had a song out called Fuck It Up. And
Which eventually was the B-side, right?
Yeah, which became the B-side. And they weren't even sure what was going to happen. So Buck is this new artist being up on Nervous. He used to come up to the office, like, every day just to kind of create business, like, you know, check in on what's going on. And he would sit where I was out front. And we would just kick it, like, you know, for hours before he was actually seen. We were close enough in age where, you know, I was still such a fan of the music. I was an aspiring MC myself.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
That I said, maybe if I get close with this guy, he would, you know, give me a couple of pointers and help me out.
But you didn't imagine we're going to have a partnership? Like, when did it become a partnership?
I honestly didn't imagine that was going to happen because... Even as things were going wrong between them, the group and Chuck, Buck was then active. Like, my role became, let me see if I can help find the management. And I remember we went to, like, 3 or 4 meetings with different managers. We went to, I'm going to leave the names out, but we went to see different people. And Buck would come out of each one of those meetings and say, nah, that's not the right fit. That's not the right fit for me. I want to go somewhere else.
Chuck Chill Out was management?
Chuck was managing Black Moon.
Okay.
And then at that point, I was already, you know, speaking to Buck of saying, like, what do you have next? Like, what's the next group? And so Buck was, you know, he was bringing me different things at that point.
And did he already have with Smith & Wesson early on?
He gave me the okie doke, because at first Buck brought up, like, 2 or 3 of his boys that were just straight, uh-uh. So
like, wasn't going to happen.
I think he was testing me out and my knowledge of music and what I liked, because he brought a couple of things up that I would listen to, and I'd say, Buck, this isn't it. And then finally, he said, all right, I got someone you got to meet. And he introduced me to Smith & Wesson. He brought them to an in-store in New Jersey. For those not old enough to know what an in-store is, it's actually like to the record store and perform and sell records.
For a single, for Who Got the Props?
Yeah.
It's before the album.
This is before the album.
So Evil D's around.
Absolutely.
5FT, who knows where the fuck he is?
Nah, big up. 5-5 is around. He's there.
Okay.
That point.
He was already there. Okay.
Yes.
And Mr. Walter's around?
Absolutely.
Or even though he's not in a group, he's basically part of the group.
But at this point, they're still not really working on the album, you know, forward facing. It's just still like about the single and can we get something going?
Was there any songs recorded from the album? Like,
I'm sure
demo versions?
There were probably some demos that I probably didn't even hear or know about, but we didn't go into like that recording phase until after Who Got the Props started to pick up some.
So how did Who Got the Props start to pick up steam?
One station at a time. No, you know what? I remember Red Alert. Red Alert started to go in on that record a little bit.
Really?
And there was still Flex definitely played a part.
Video Music Box.
Video Music Box was Ralph McDaniels. Yeah. What did we like actually,
the videos where I first
actually
heard
look. You know, as you're talking me through this, I'm remembering Ralph directed the video.
Of course.
Oh,
we gave, you know, we had to work out a deal with Ralph. That was, you know, big up Chuck there, because there's no question that Chuck probably pulled that card.
Right.
And Ralph filmed the video, and then that video was all over Video Music Box. And I would say that was probably the kicker for that, because there was Hot 97, I think, was even still
what
like
time,
just,
what year?
This is 93.
It's right around the
you
time they became a
Flex
state.
Flex wasn't even on yet, because this is crazy.
Oh, he was
too.
On that. Oh, maybe 94.
No, it was like 94.
Yeah.
Wait, Flex was
no,
Simon
right.
Nervous.
No.
Yeah, he was. Right.
Yeah. We were putting
through
I was,
Chuck, yeah.
We were putting out, not even through Chuck, just through Mike, we were putting out Funkmaster Flex 12 inches.
You mean, yeah. Would you
Six
be referring
million ways
come
to die?
On,
this
baby.
One.
Come on, baby.
Yes. So I was doing radio promotion for this man, too. I remember I took Flex down to BET.
Oh, that's why you guys are so
in the
close.
Minivan.
I was wondering
we
why.
We go back, man.
He
why
plays
go back.
All your records, man. Not all, but
he did.
More
he,
than
yes.
most people most, of the same era.
Yeah, exactly. And now I remember why. Now yeah. I realize why.
Yeah, we have a lot of history with Flex.
So, how big did it get? How big? I mean, I remember Who Got the Props was got pretty popular.
The
you
video
know,
Ralph McDaniel's video director was like, I need more backpack. It's put the, some yes. more stuff in your backpack.
It's the most backpacky video.
But
of there, all time.
That was before backpack.
No,
was
I know.
Big, right?
What,
you didn't even know what to look.
It's what invented the term
backpack
and you holding your straps and bopping
yep,
your
and
head.
Yeah, you love
came
that.
Came from Who Got the Props.
It's true.
I loved it because I could actually do that dance.
Yeah, I'm all upper body, no footwork. All right. Upper body. I mean, you could catch me in Champs. A tramp,
yo,
tramps.
But you know
tramps.
What?
Tramps. Tramps. Any show look, with my backpack just
going hard
look,
pot.
93, right? 93. This is obviously before internet, before so much. It took us like six to eight months to break that record, because it wasn't going up on a blog post and then just
right.
Like, yeah, you know, yeah. running down the scroll. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It literally would be one spin at a time.
Old school,
and then
yeah.
we got like Philadelphia, we got Hartford, we got certain stations to come on in the mix.
What was Buck doing while that was all happening?
Well, at that point, once we knew we had something there, the label put him to work on the album.
But I'm saying, well, what did he do the first 3 months of the single trying to work it? Like, did he have a job?
Or he was just showing up at the office?
No, yeah, because he's 17 years old at this point.
Oh, he was only, oh my God.
Yeah. You know, Buck was a hustler, so he was out even prior
selling
to that.
Selling fucking candy for his basketball team or whatever?
Selling oils. And
oh,
like,
really? Oils?
Yeah,
okay.
Down on
that
Broadway.
Is
picking Ave and shit.
Yeah, like he was out there hustling incense and oils and
right.
you know different things. I remember he got me one of the first times we went on the road. He like you know the oils that you put on and they smell a certain way, whatever. Yeah. So I was like, all right, all the guys are wearing it. I'm like, how much for a bottle? And he takes out this big bottle and he fills up this little bottle. It's like right in front of him. He's like $20. I'm like, what for the big bottle?
Yo, and. But what was Buck like as a person at that point? Was he similar to the way he is now? I mean, I've only known him for the last 8 years. He's a really cool dude.
Yeah, a lot of energy, a lot of curiosity, a lot of, you know, desire to learn, a lot of hands-on. Buck is he's a very do-it-for-yourself type of person.
And you guys always got along well.
Yeah, we got along really well.
Have you ever had major problems?
Of course. All families and all artists and managers are going to have their
but you lumps. Guys are, I've told you this many times, you guys are like among the only ones who never really broke up. And like at this point, hard to see that at this point there would now be a fallout, you know?
We probably never made it big enough, that's why.
And more money. If there had been more money, you could have turned on each other in a second.
I appreciate the jokes. And I understand what you're saying, but just so you know, you, Drew Ha, have had a major influence in my life. Before I met you, musically and the stuff you did, after I knew who you were and watched you hustle and even put money in my pocket. So wow. I'm saying on Juan Epp, thank you, Drew Ha.
Word, thank you.
I mean, we all wanted to be fucking mega millionaires, and we still might be.
Right. It's
you
not
You might
over.
Find that
it's
next Uber,
that's
baby.
Right.
Yeah, by
that's
the way,
right. It ain't over.
I got to tell you, if there's one person, first of all, I echo the same thing. Drew has been great to me since the second
Thank
I got
you.
Here in every way. But he's actually, him and his brother are the ones who I do think are going to end up stumbling and still into one of
yeah.
those fucking things.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk. I mean, we'll get there. But of course, you guys just did really well with the Joey Badass project as
yes.
well.
Yeah. Well, just for clarity on that, for Joey, we're consultants to his label. So Joey's not on Duck Down. I don't want to, you know, paint that picture. But yeah, we've been involved with Joey now for 3 years.
And it's gone well. There was an impact that was noticeable from when you showed up.
Thank you.
At least I believe.
Yeah, now, congratulations to Joey. For those that don't even know or realize, like, numbers anymore. Right? Yeah,
what's he sold so far?
He's at 150,000 worldwide.
Pretty good, right?
We used to scream and celebrate the SoundScan numbers, right? Remember now how it gets all quiet because nobody wants you to know what their SoundScan numbers are anymore.
But listen, for a guy who... For Joey's situation, 150,000
worldwide sales. Look,
very good.
He sold more records first week than Chris Brown and Tiger. You know, Joey sold more records than Lupe Fiasco first week. Like, we can go down a list of a lot.
I gotta
of
tell you,
know,
they're both dear
outsold.
Friends of mine. I was shocked at how much he outsold Bronson.
He outsold Bronson.
I thought 25,000. I thought they would be in the exact same lane. And Joey was definitely one full notch up sales-wise. There's no getting around it, which I think is, you know, a credit to many things. Among them, I think the movement they built. You know, Bronson's one artist. Joey and Pro Era kind of have created a thing. But again, and everyone will always point out when people see things like that, they'll always compare it back to boot camp.
Absolutely. I mean, we met when we first saw Joey. You know, there's no question. When I saw it, I saw
a young
Buckshot.
Yeah, they, in particular, Joey and them are very you guys-ish. So the record, Who Got the Prop starts blowing up. Next record, of course, was this. I mean, this didn't become a smash or anything. It was just dope.
No, this record actually is what pushed things over the top.
Yeah, this
because
is a smash.
This was Hot 97. Hot 97 was prior. Who Got the Props was prior to Hot 97.
Right. This was
Hot 97.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't
realize
that.
This landed Black Moon on Summer Jam on the first Hot 97 Summer
Jam.
Whoa!
That really?
Record, yeah, that record. That was it.
By the way, so you know when there are arguments where people are like, yo, Hot 97 is not the same. And I'm like, nah, man, we always play shit like that. This is when it actually wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was in regular rotation. This is hard.
This is in regular rotation. 90-something spins a week.
Wow. It was on, you know where they played it in D.C.? Do you remember?
TGC.
A little in Mix Show, but also at the time, I think Flava 1580 was around.
Wow.
The AM station.
Then we could actually go see Tigger. We were on Tigger's show.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were stations supporting this. These records made it around the East Coast. And those stations opened up the airwaves to this music.
So how was the money at this point?
It was getting better quickly, you know? Not like it is today. Like, what I'm privileged to see today from some of these artists that are coming up right now, there weren't as many brands involved. There weren't as many outlets for, like, endorsing, being product ambassadors and things like that, but the show money was still good, and that's really where
is the show money not that different?
It's not too different, but the festival money is a lot different.
Well,
and there's a lot more festivals today than there were then.
Right, but in terms of the regular club shows, if you're doing the 9:30 club then or the 9:30 club now or Irving Plaza or whatever, generally similar.
Pretty similar.
Yeah, no matter, it's like the same amount of people, the ticket. As much as inflation affects the world, ticket prices are always between $10, $30.
Yeah,
you know, like
right. When I never, like, you said earlier, you don't trust these promoters. Like, one thing I never understood was how they made their money at the bar. Like, I was always counting it that way. I was like, damn, this place is packed. They probably would have just hired us to bring in all these people to use the bar.
Well, you can't qualify the bar either, especially when beer's on tap. How are we qualifying now?
Right.
You counting the beers that you're selling? We don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're... So I always have an issue with that, too. So things start to build. The album came out after how many MCs?
Yeah. Album came out, I'm going to say, that fall.
94?
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it 94? So we rode that single probably 2 years.
Was it 94?
It was 94.
I know I had a Discman. And I know I listened to
a Discman.
What's the first song?
I Got You Open.
No, that's the first song on the album.
Oh no! Powerful Impact.
Powerful Impact. Woo! I remember first hearing that. I know it's Busta Rhymes' voice.
Right.
You wanted somebody had somebody else used the same beat around that same time.
That takes me back to cold winter nights. Buck would Buck, Evil D, and Walt, they recorded all night in the worst studios.
Yeah.
They didn't have heat.
It feels that way.
Oh, and now these sessions, man, those sessions were crazy. Because now you got Smith & Wesson every time out. Like they're in the, and this is like right before we switched to D&D. And right. then we went to D&D Studios and like the energy
luxury.
And the vibe.
The lap of
that
luxury.
That was luxury, right? And how run down that was. Big up D&D. But then at that point, you bring in all the energy of all the other MCs and producers.
Where were you living at the time?
On 12th Street in a studio apartment.
By yourself?
By myself.
Yeah, where are you from?
Best decision I made was I was this close to Buck and I getting an apartment together.
No.
And I didn't. And just thank goodness it didn't work out. Because
it would have changed everything.
It would have changed everything. Way too much.
Too much.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm a neat 20 freak. Hours and a he's day. Like, Buck will just put the blunt down anywhere, weed all over the place. I can't do that.
Where are you from, Drew?
I'm from White Plains, New York.
Okay.
Come on, I said Bushwick to White Plains.
Oh, you talking about your bars?
I'm talking about my bars, Bushwick
which
to White Plains.
Which record are the bars on?
You the man.
You the man, you the man, you the man? Oh, it might be the instrumental,
the bitches,
though.
Because I tell them I'm Puerto Rican.
I think it's the instrumental, though.
That's good. I don't need to be embarrassed right now.
No, you should spit it on the instrumentals, which you should do.
No. Wait, did I get you to perform that?
Did you? Somebody got me to do it somewhere.
I think you did.
I have performed it a few select times. But we'll leave that alone.
Okay, leave it alone.
Yeah.
So you're born and raised in White Plains?
Yes.
Always. What year did you start really getting into hip-hop?
As young as I can remember, I would say probably 11 or 12. First thing is, like, I go back to literally grade school of Sugar Hill Gang, you know, just hearing kids bringing in Rapper's Delight, like, you know, certain records, right? And then, I think a changing point was probably Run DMC. And not the, you know, the commercial Run DMC, but like Sucker MCs and just certain records that I was like, wow, this is just, you know, a ferociousness to this music, that the energy and the vibes to it that just, you know, pulled me in.
You know what, Saif? When I hear about the old days, you know what it makes me feel like?
What is that?
It makes me feel like I wish I could just build my own website and talk about it.
How would you do that?
How would I build my own website?
Yeah, there's no way you could do that. You need at least a team of 40 engineers.
You're wrong.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll go to Squarespace.
What?
Yep, Squarespace.
How's that possible?
You go to squarespace.com, use the code WANEP, and you get an incredible deal to build your own website. It could have a store, it could be a blog, it can be anything. A full functioning website, and guess what? They have a support staff there all the time. It's like, basically, it's like you have your own crew of best friends all helping you with your website.
And I don't need a team of 40 engineers with degrees from Harvard and MIT and Yale.
No, they already did that when you go to Squarespace. They handle all that.
They have the engineers.
Yeah, you don't need to bring your own.
And then they make it easy for you to just do it yourself.
It's beyond easy. Even you could do it.
So my grandmother wants to set up a website.
But your grandmother's, she's not alive.
Well, my daughter's grandmother.
Your mother?
My other one, mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law,
wants to set up a website.
Yes.
Goes to Squarespace.
Uses the code...
WANEP.
She puts in WANEP to get, yeah, of course.
And is that easy?
It's incredibly easy. Within minutes, she could have a site up and online. Check it out. Squarespace.com. Build it beautiful, Saif.
Well, that was incredible because I didn't even know what was going on right there.
That's why we're the best.
That's brilliant.
If only we knew anyone who was connected to brands.
That was beautiful. Like, maybe we can use that to update the duckdown.com website.
Strongly recommend this.
Right. That would be great.
Squarespace is fantastic. But you were painting a picture there, Drew, of the... early 80s, and it's funny because I think of us as being similar in age because we know each other pretty well until you mention that you were around for Sugar Hill Gang.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, whoa, Drew Howe's old as fuck, God.
But I was a baby at that point.
You were a kid.
I was a kid. And so, I just remember certain records. Shaka Khan.
So you really lived through... Here's the main difference between us and age is that when the Juice Crew happened, you were already like... very conscious of what was happening.
But I wasn't like seeking it out. It was more...
It was just there.
Right.
It was in the ether.
It was more like things that I would discover at school. Because remember, where could you hear this stuff? There's no way that you know... And as a kid, I heard it on just, you know, what BLS
and Kiss at Night.
And
on the weekend.
Kiss FM on the weekends. That's where it would... And NYU Radio, I want to say that I would... If I played with the dial in my house, I could dial into... LIU, something in Long Island. There was a
station.
Possibly, no. Possibly a station in Long Island. Wildman Steve and some of these guys.
That's right. BAU.
BAU.
WBAU.
And I would dial in on certain nights, and I remember hearing Public Enemy for the first time on that station.
You remember what record it was?
Public Enemy was on that station.
That's where Chuck they did a show there.
The Rhythm, The Rebel, the one with the crazy
Don't
screech.
Believe the Hype?
No.
Bring the Noise?
Yeah, probably Bring the Noise.
Bless you, Syfe.
That was
Syfe. No, that's Rebel Without a Pause.
Rebel Without a Pause.
Want to know a really bad secret about me?
Rebel Without a Pause.
I confuse a lot of the main Public Enemy smashers.
Well, but put that record on, because the first time I remember hearing going crazy.
You can't describe a Public Enemy record with the one with the loud sounds. They all have loud sounds.
No, but this one had that crazy, eerie screech in the back.
I don't know what this world is coming to. Yes, the rhythm, the rebel, without a pause, I'm lowering my...
You hear that screech,
crazy.
All right?
My mom bought me this album.
My mom
that hates me.
My mom and dad just loved that I was listening to that. Brothers and sisters.
Did they?
No, they absolutely did support me. I'm only teasing, but I'm sure secretly in their own conversations, they're like,
what's
wrong listening
with
him? To, right? I was the white kid. See, for the kids growing up today or listening, it's so... integrated now, and it's so normal.
Well, listen, I was unique, so I know you were really unique.
Yeah, I got teased. I was isolated. I was singled out as liking that music, and I didn't really know too much about other music.
Well, good thing you broke the stereotype and didn't become a Jew that owns a label.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
But you actually. Oh, you want to laugh? Hold on, here, put on your headphones, Syfe. This is, Drew Ha, this is when, you guys remember, I'm guessing you used to,
Yeah.
Oh, this is it.
Yeah, y'all. You know how we get down.
No.
This is Black Moon, Buckshot 5FT, DJ Evil D, and right about now, we up in the telly, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
Warzone status, from dusk till dawn, with my man, PMD, CBA, and my man, Trip. You know how we get down, and yo, Trip, spinning on the ones and twos, done.
Now, that was not the one I meant to play, though. I have one, where I guess it was when you guys recorded drops, at the studio.
You would do them at the station or the studio and then send them to you guys.
I have one. This is I was college radio DJ.
Oh my God, how did you send them back then?
Fucking slow
CD
mail
or something?
Mine you sent
a DAT.
On
a DAT.
You sent me a cassette actually with this
cassette.
One.
Cassette.
You
guys know what a cassette
is? A whole cassette with a 15 second drop.
Yeah, a whole cassette for that.
No, they made like 1 minute. Remember they made like those 1 minute cassettes.
Yeah. But it's still the same amount of plastic.
Yeah.
I know, it's really
just less
PMD.
Tape.
Y'all owe me $5, you know
Evil
what I'm saying?
D.
You're probably wondering why you owe me $5. It's Evil D, by the way. Woke up, you know what I'm saying?
Sounds so much like you.
Horrible.
That was portable. But what I was trying to find was another Black Moon one I have that you guys recorded for me and sent. And I'm not kidding. It was one of those times where the labels would sometimes not have my proper name. And so I was going by Peter Rosenberg then, before I ever went by Peter Rosenberg. And Buckshot goes, yo, we up in here hanging out with... Peter Rosenberg legit laughs at me on my own draw. So you guys, I'm trying to rank. What was the biggest? Is who got the props the biggest record from the first album?
I would think probably.
No.
And you going this one?
No.
You going this way?
The remix.
We're going this way, huh?
Remix.
We're going to go with the.
Which wasn't on the album. Right. But we sold a shitload of cassettes.
Did you clear this?
And vinyl, of course.
Really?
Yeah.
What did Barry White get for this?
I don't remember the terms for it, but probably got like most of the record on the publishing side.
Apparently he was pretty down to clear though, I guess.
Yeah.
Getting that money.
There was a big reggae record the same exact time that used the same exact loop.
Was that coincidental or no?
Bougie.
No, Mega.
Oh, Mega Bantan, yeah.
No, it was not. It was coincidental. And when we heard it, we had a rush to get our version out.
But it turned out cool.
Oh,
turned out to work
they
perfect.
Did that. Oh, so they didn't do this off of your record?
No. No, they just happened to come out.
A lot of records happen like that. It's always weird.
Especially on reggae. The reggae usually takes it after.
Yeah.
And makes a, you know.
Yeah, but it's funny because you can tell it's slightly different. Theirs sounds cleaner.
Oh, Evil D and Walt don't do anything clean.
Yeah, you guys dirty. They dirtied up way better.
But it was Buck's idea on the loop, and he brought it to Ian Walt, and they'll probably argue me down the other way. But I'm sure, they came together to produce.
But
that
that's
record.
What is that again? I got you open.
Remix.
Yeah, I love the original.
Now, real quick,
yeah,
and if you want to, insight, I'm glad you went there because if you want to know what a good single sounds like, this is a good single. A side is this, the remix we just played. B side has.
Oh.
Oh man, I like the original better.
So grimy.
And then, just to be crazy, you guys throw on the crazy mixtape third song, a title that Drew could never once say out loud.
Fucking ass.
Killing every person.
Killing every person in sight.
Yes. Another one of my favorites.
Ooh, this is one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Every single had like a new
every
record.
Every single has some shit like this.
But these aren't even on the album.
I know, it's a new song.
See, today we'd be crushing it with iTunes single sales.
Yeah, this would have been big.
Right.
And I remember this song was one of those ones that appeared on some mixtape. Do you remember what it was?
A lot of mixtapes.
It was on a bunch of mixtapes, yeah. So over a few months. And everyone's like, what the fuck is that song?
Yep.
Always kept it fresh.
Yeah.
New songs.
But I don't know.
What's the other one?
Another remix.
I love this.
Same sample, right, but different part. Ian Walt flipped a different part of it.
You flipped it? You helped flip
no,
it?
No, Ian Walt.
Oh, Ian Walt did.
E, not me.
Oh, they said me.
Yeah.
Did you ever get involved in production at all?
Just me in the studio telling them, do it this way, say that. Like, you know, trying to tell them to do the verse again. Maybe doing some drops, but anytime I was in there, Mr. Walt would get very uncomfortable.
Did you have any, now, real quick before we change the subject, and the B-side of that, which was dope, because like we said, they always put out more songs, was this.
Fire.
If you guys are wondering, this is called Murder MCs. It's another unreleased B-side. They would throw in the single. But did you see yourself in any way, like, did you have any, even though the timing's almost the same, did you have any Diddy aspirations?
No, but I think that there's a commonality. Is that a word? Commonality? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Okay, good. That there are people in the studio that may not be technical producers, but they do help orchestrate the production.
No,
they do help guide, you know, concepts.
There's the vibe, yeah.
Yeah, and there's certain people that just sit in there in a studio session and be like, yeah, that was great. And they're just excited to be in the studio. And there's other people that'll drive the artist that will say, I think you could do that verse better. I think maybe you could change that word. I think, you know, just little things like we're saying, a drop here, a drop there. All these tracks are laid down, and now you can kind of play maestro with how you want things to come in and sounds to sound. So in that sense, I understand why Diddy was considered or viewed himself as a producer, even though some technical producers be like, man, he can't work the MPC.
Yeah,
he doesn't know how to work the 12.
But that's hip-hop taking the word producer and making it mean one thing.
Right.
When before hip-hop, producer meant, it's a vague term. It means a lot of different things. And someone who just makes beats is technically, legally, not a producer, but more of a writer. You're writing the music part of the song.
And you know what's so true about that is that you can have a lot of musicians that aren't the producers, but there is a producer that's telling the musician what bass line to play or what.
Yep. Quincy Jones didn't play any of those instruments.
But I think in the sense of like when you're sampling, when you're doing those things, those beat makers are producers, but it does become a joint effort of like other people do have an influence.
Some of them are good at it. And some of them just were great at finding good loops, but needed someone to add this or pull this out.
There's
or drop
no question.
This.
Like, yeah, Diddy knew what he wanted, and he knew he had to put it all together.
What was your relationship like with him? You guys had ups and downs with Diddy and Bad Boy, didn't you?
We had some ups and downs with them, but he reached out to us early on to have Smith & Wesson appear on the Mary J. Blige "I Love You" remix. Cue it up.
Pretty good.
This one, if you're wondering, if you're going, really, which one was that?
Pretty good record.
It would be this one right here. Does your copy of it sound pretty nasty too?
Yeah, close to.
So I had like an early on learning lesson through Diddy, and that was taking the pressure of being a manager to all of these artists. And feeling the pressure from them to deliver for them. And Diddy invited us up to Bad Boy to negotiate this deal, or to not even negotiate it, just to kind of put it all together. And my first mistake was I went up there with 12 people. I let like the entire boot camp come to that meeting, which was probably like completely unnecessary and not the way to do it.
And unprofessional, yeah.
And like, unprofessional. And then from there, we
did he say anything? Or could you tell he was like,
He probably was like, what the fuck? Why did you come in here with 12 people? But then on top of all that, like in front of 12 people, we asked, I had to do it. And I like asked for way too much money. But I had to do it because those 12 people were with us. So I couldn't like leave that meeting and say, damn, you know, like have one of Tech or Steel's boys say that I undersold.
You're not doing it.
Right, that I wasn't trying to deliver.
How much, too much did you ask for?
Significantly too much. So much so that I would say we ended up getting about 10% of what I asked for.
Oh my God.
Diddy was like, yo, man, yo. He was like, yo, Mobb Deep just did this on the strength for like a certain fee that they got. Like he just started breaking down. He's like, because so-and-so has to get paid and so-and-so has to get paid and I got to get paid. So he's like, I can't give you what you're asking for. And he broke it down and we were like, okay.
Oh my God, that's funny. Were you embarrassed about, is that one of those things you get embarrassed about after the fact or no? Like, I can't believe I said that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, you for your situation, you were doing right by the situation as far as how it is concerned to you.
Right.
Like, whether he said no or not, you might as well start out that high, and at least you get credit then. You know, you wonder why a relationship like yours lasted so long. One of those things is early on, had like all the artists, when you didn't know them that well, had their people not fucked with you and been in your corner, that can be a real detriment too.
Absolutely. Head on. But I did leave that meeting and be like, damn, I didn't, like, I knew in my heart I didn't play it right, because I still would rather have had his respect of, you know, like, that we handled it the proper way and then he can
come
back.
Did his respect?
I mean, respect for how we came in and negotiated it and handled it. But later for that, whatever, we did.
You mean as opposed to walking in with 12 people and asking probably for some close to 7 figures?
Yeah.
Did you ever do anything?
For a feature on an artist who was huge. And at the time, you saw all the people who were popping were getting those features. It was such a good indicator for you to get a Mary J. Blige feature.
Yes.
Only, they're all good ones, pretty much.
But remember, too, at this time, as Bad Boy is developing and becoming what they are, we were very competitive. So we, you know, Buck also looked at Bad Boy as like, well, that's what Duckdown is. Like, not saying that we became that, obviously.
But that's what,
you were in the battle.
You're right, like, yeah.
In the heat of the battle. Now, just quick, because I know you'll appreciate the story. When we went to go record that record, I did learn quickly, and it was just me, Tech, and Steel that went to the studio to do the actual record. And when we got there, it was Diddy. Mary wasn't there, but he had LL Cool J in the session with him. So it's like,
doing the other remix. The
LL was just, he was just in the room with Diddy.
No, but they, remember, he did the Mary remix.
At the same time, right?
But but they weren't recording that night. And that night was a learning experience too, because Diddy straight up told the guys what he wanted. Like, he told Tech and Steel, like, I want you to say Bad Boy. I want you to say certain things in the track.
Right.
And I'm looking at him going, you don't tell Smith and Wesson anything. Like, that's what I'm thinking. But he got him to...
He did it.
He
did.
And they, but to Tech and Steel's credit, they did it in a very subtle way where it comes off perfectly. They don't oversell it. They still big up, like, all the things that they wanted to get across, but they say Bad Boys coming through. But, you know, they do it in a certain way.
You're right.
Way.
They did do a nice job.
I don't think they said Diddy anywhere in the verse.
No, I don't think so.
He did ask... I think he did
say
ask
Mary J.
Yeah.
He says Mary J. They say Mary J. Bad Boys coming through.
But I learned, but that's what I'm saying.
Smith and Wesson don't play.
I did learn from him, like, you got to ask for what you want. Like, you can't be humble and just be quiet
in the
room.
That's in life, man.
Yeah.
That's in life. Not just doing records.
Asking for what you want?
Ask for what you want.
All right, Syph. I want you to throw your stinky shrimp in the trash.
Can't do that. Listen, I've been getting shut down left and right lately. But you know how I know I've been getting shut down? Because I've been fucking asking.
There you go.
As soon as I saw Kevin Hart the other day, I said, you need a DJ on your tour?
He was like, nope.
He said, nope. That's exactly what he said. But I said, okay, I'm planting a seed. One day you might need a DJ. I'm the one you should think of.
Where did you see Kevin?
In Boston.
What was he doing? Filming.
He's filming, doing a movie.
Did he come to the club?
Yeah.
Randomly, or you invited him?
I invited him.
And he showed up?
Yeah.
That's still pretty cool.
Man, cool. He's man cool as he always was.
Did you tell him to go sit his ass down and take a rest for a minute?
No.
Because he's...
Yeah, he's out there.
Kevin Hart, in my opinion, I love Kevin, is treating the movie game like the drug business. It's like every dollar that's out there, I'm taking it right now because it might never come back. And at a certain point, you have to decide when it's time to stop that. And you got to go sit down for a minute and be like, you know what, I'm sitting on 40 million, 50 million. What the fuck do I know? But in my opinion, from the outside looking in, I think the brand...
Why do you got to stop that?
Because I think at some point the brand needs a reset, because when you...
But not when it's the hottest. You keep getting that money and until they tell
when
you...
When those checks are that big.
Then they tell you when you're
saying
need a reset.
It's too big to slow down, you're saying.
And they tell you when you need a reset. And then you go sit down and you come up with that next art project.
You got need the reset after you get a flop. And sometimes you don't envision the flop ahead of time. You see Will Ferrell and you say, hey, me and him are going to make a great movie. And then you don't.
Get hard to sit through the movie?
Was it bad?
I didn't see it.
I saw it.
It was bad?
It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great.
It was get hard. It was more than hard. It was difficult. Well, here's the thing.
I had a song licensed in that movie, though, so big them up.
So big ups to that movie.
Big them up.
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I found out about Get Hard. Sorry, quick aside about Kevin, because I love him. But and I love Will Ferrell, but I didn't want to go see the movie. That's a problem.
I felt it was like a little over the top. I almost felt a little uncomfortable for how they were setting that movie up. You know,
how blatant it was. It felt a little dated.
Yeah, it felt dated.
Very interesting. Hey, guess what, though, guys? Kevin Hart, he's doing pretty well. Him and The Rock have a movie together.
Yeah, I guess that's what they're doing.
Yeah, he's out there in Boston for that movie. Because I know they post about it like nonstop on social media. The Mary J. Blige remix happens for Smith & Wesson. Mm-hmm. You said you went to the studio. But hold on, didn't things at some point go left between you and Bad Boy?
There was some instances between some of the groups. And that, you know, yeah, that
well,
caused
Biggie
the damper.
And Tech are friends.
They were friends. A lot of these guys are friends because a lot of them are from the same neighborhood. Yeah. So they just know, they have common friends. So a lot of them grew up together.
But
Big and Tech, there was some things that happened that I'd rather not even discuss.
Go into?
Yeah, because, you know, they're just so in the past and the guys have always over the years have worked past it. But yeah, there things happen where...
Isn't Tech the guy... No, is that Warning? No, that's MOP.
I don't know where you're going.
And, what is his Warning, fame?
Remember the guy
from the Hill up in Brownsville?
Yeah.
I don't think he was talking about those guys.
No, not in a bad way, but they were telling him about it. Nah, forget it, whatever.
Yeah.
But things were weird for a while.
Things were weird. I mean, look, you know what it was. There was a group, OGCs, and you had Biggie, and there was some beef between...
It was OGC, that's
right. It was OGCs. And this was also... You know, not too long before he passed. So, I do believe because of the relationships between them and Junior Mafia and Tech, and like he's saying that he was from those neighborhoods that a lot of these guys dealt with each other, that it would have all eventually been squashed anyway. But when he passed, there was no way to do that.
Right.
You know, and so it just kind of
so it bothered everyone. There are people that bothered.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's shitty. That's gotta be a shitty feeling.
Tupac get you, like you guys were working with Tupac.
Yeah.
but I don't think Pac's reaching out to us had nothing to do with...
No, I'm not saying it did. I'm just saying...
You're saying like things going... There's all kinds of crazy shit that happens in the universe.
All types
and you,
of crazy
and
shit.
You and Buckshot stayed with Tupac, didn't you?
Me and Buck and Tech and Steel spent 3 weeks at Pac's house out in Calabasas, California.
Yeah, when they did my improv show, that was the story they told.
Was it about the soda?
Yeah, soda.
But that was my soda story.
And yeah. Buckshot told it?
And Buckshot, he probably told the soda story.
Stole your story, man. Stole your shit. So but what about Smith & Wesson?
Like, I feel bad, though. Should we not? It's like, even though I've heard you tell the story before, I don't know if we can refer to the story and not tell the story at all. Want to do a brief version?
The quick version.
The condensed version.
With the condensed version is we're at Pac's house. He's going to film a movie by day, Gridlock, I believe. We're at his house all day and night. He just moved into this house, and he has a fridge full of orange soda. We drink, literally, like we're just popping soda. Popping soda, putting it down. We get warm. We go back to the fridge, open
pop
up.
Another one.
Pop another one. Leaving cans half, three quarters full. We get 3 days go by and there's like four sodas left in the fridge. And I get down in the morning and I open the refrigerator and there's a yellow Post-it that says Pac's soda. So I was like, wow, this is big trouble. And I went upstairs and I woke everyone up and I was like, yo, you don't put a Post-it. You don't claim something if you're not conscious and aware in your own house that you don't want anyone touching this soda.
No, you don't.
And now, you know, that became the orange soda story. And what I ended up doing as the jokester prankster that I was, we had a security guard, Buck's brother, his name was Thor. And I took yellow Post-its and all over his pantry and his kitchen, I would put like Thor's oatmeal, Thor's suit, and I was putting those shits all over, because I know Pac loved Thor, and then I didn't know how they were going to take the joke, but his sister and the mom, everyone was just cracking up.
How big was the house?
It was big. It was a nice mansion size, and Suge had just bought it for him.
And Pac was pretty ringing at this point.
It was about to be really, really on for him at that point. This is 96. I want to say the beginning of 96.
So that's interesting, because it's like, I mean, you guys are off, you know, between, Black Moon's between albums. Yes. Smith & Wesson album's out.
We just launched OGC and Helter Skelter's album.
And what was Pac like, though, just on a personal interaction kind of level?
What you see on, what you see in all the interviews, what you see on TV, what you see in some of the movies. He was a little bit of all that, but very fair, very consistent, very animated, very adamant about his positions. You know, he
had super smart.
Very smart, very calculating, but fair. You know, like when I say fair, it's like he had some bully in him. You know, like he was a leader, but he was a leader from out of respecting him, but he also had that bully in him that he could kind of sway a whole room to get to go in the way
he
in the direction he wants it to go.
But ultimately, his what he was trying to achieve was usually fair.
Absolutely.
He might push you and blah, 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 but he wasn't a dickhead who was getting over on people.
Right, but like, we'd be in the studio and he put so much pressure on people. Like, we were recording that album, One Nation. He didn't give, when I say that he's fair, I'm meaning that he didn't give a fuck who you were. It could be Buckshot, it could be Daz and Corrupt, or whoever else in the corner. He was like, yo, if your verses aren't ready when it's time to record, the next person's up and you're not going on that song. And nobody could contest it. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it didn't matter who it was. So he was fair. Like, he wasn't playing favorites to the Outlaws. He wasn't playing favorites to.
And is that what it was? Was it the Outlaws album?
No, it was going to be his album called One Nation.
And what happened to everything?
That shit, it's on like 15 other albums. They stripped down all of the vocals from.
Are
like
you guys
us.
All out of it?
Yeah, we were on like two tracks. There's a song called Better Days on. Or no, he has an album called Better Days, and there's one song that we have that's on that album. But a bunch of the other songs, our vocals were stripped off, and the new person was put on.
And you don't have them?
I have like probably 8 or 9 of the tracks.
Really?
Yeah.
But all weird Tupac bootleg albums or some real albums.
Yeah, they got used on real albums.
No. We have like the actual.
Right, but his verses got used on the real ones.
Yes, his verses got used on the real ones.
Hey, you know what song from around that time was pretty good?
Yes. Yes.
We didn't talk about Smith & Wesson album. Man.
No, we didn't.
You're skipping around a lot.
Jump around.
This new one app.
Yes, y'all.
I'm not feeling this new one app.
All right, what do I do? I'll play music.
Smith & Wesson album, PNC, We Live in Brooklyn, Baby.
Home Sweet
Fucking
Home.
Classics.
Woo! Yeah, that.
And the feeling that, what's the first song? Bucktown?
No, to my Tim's and Hood check.
No, Bucktown.
The first single.
Bucktown, single, yeah.
Oh, yeah, on the radio, same effect as the Black Moon. Yeah. Crazy.
This was so good.
Very fortunate at that time. It's difficult, right? It's difficult to introduce the next group after the next group.
And then to come with something this strong. I mean, that's why I guess you have to give a lot of credit to the beat miners, huh?
You got to give them a ton of credit. Because these beats are timeless.
And it's really the similarity. That's what made Boot Camp the thing.
Right.
I mean, there's sound, other things.
But there was a sound to it.
Saif, how much did you cut that up?
Always.
What's your move? How do you do it? Enter the cipher with your lighter.
Cipher with your lighter. Cipher. It's right on the snare. It's easy.
You don't make it just like about entering cipher, like to make it sort of homoerotic?
No, that sounds weird. Sounds like I'm in like a
or like, porn. Oh, hold on. But the thing about, don't get weird about it, but like, what about if he doesn't like this? Enter the cipher, enter, and then as you do that, you like kind of lift your shirt up and point at a guy in the crowd and like enter and open your mouth a little bit.
Enter the cipher. Right.
That would be, I don't think that would be weird.
What if I came around the DJ booth
and bent over?
And bent over backwards while DJing backwards.
Enter the cipher.
And you pointed to your own ass.
Or he makes a t-shirt that says enter the cipher with an arrow pointing down.
Yeah. Those are all good ideas, guys. We don't all have time for everyone's ideas, but they're all really good. And how big a success was The Shining?
It was big, man. It was just as big, if not bigger, than Enter the Stage. And I remember that Like, at the time, there was some distractors. Like, the source said that it sounded too much like Black Moon. Notice how I'm, like, saying the source? Because whatever they wrote mattered much back then, right?
It was big deal.
It was a big deal what the review said. And that was, I think they gave them, like, 3 mics. And the guys went crazy over that. And
I would have gone crazy, too. It's way better than 3 mics.
Yeah. But individually.
Oh, they went crazy, like, upset.
Crazy upset.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did Enter the Stage get?
4.5, I think.
Ooh. Strong.
Yeah.
Should have been 5.
Nah, probably 4.5 was right.
Why? Why do you think so?
Because I think you got to always leave some room for improvement. I think if all of those B-sides were on Enter the Stage, and then it would have been a 5.
Touché, Drew.
Which of the fivers do you think deserved it?
Refresh me.
Illmatic? Illmatic's a 5.
Absolutely.
Life After Death is 5.
Didn't Outkast get a 5?
I think eventually. I think Aquemini did.
Not the first one?
No. I think the first one was 4 or 4.5.
Yeah, I would say all of those deserve it.
Did Biggie get 5?
Life After Death did. By the way, no one believes this. Illmatic? 4.5 to me. Why? Why? Should have 2 more songs on it. If I was reviewing it, I would be like, man, this is perfect. It's over!
Less is more.
Less is more.
More artists need to understand that.
That is true. By and
from
large,
their
you're right.
Albums and then also from their stage performances.
I just got an email for a Duck Down Barbecue.
Wait for it. Hosted by? Oh, my God. We're back in Brooklyn again.
It's a fun spot.
Yeah, you know
to
what
be
you know what's really fun to go?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Drew.
Yeah. He's the worst. And by the way, the reason we do this barbecue site, it's all about that cheddar. We out there making.
We're giving. No, it's actually a free show.
I know. It's for the people. But yo, Sife, you know when was a really fun time to go to that? It actually turned out great. But I was out. It's in Brownsville every year. All right. And.
It's fine.
Enjoy yourself.
Right.
I went out to Brownsville 2 days after the Nicki Minaj thing. And when I was like on fleek, I was like.
They gave it up for you, though.
They did. I had one person who said some weird shit to me, and he was just a psycho, like some weird psycho. But of course, I mean, I get that's it's really my scene. It's a great crowd who's there to see great hip hop.
Sean Price's reaction to you was priceless. That was the best. Do you remember he was like,
he goes, "The man who wrecked the buffet
at the Harris Club."
Yes, that was what Sean Price said when he saw me.
That's what Sean said in front of everyone. He's like, "Ladies and gentlemen," he was saying it loud.
Right, the man who wrecked the what's that from, Sife?
Beverly Hills Cop.
It was pretty good. It was an awesome intro.
Is this the man that wrecked the buffet at the Harris Club?
Exactly. What's your favorite song off of the Smith & Wesson?
PNC.
I don't know if I have that on here. I'll be honest with you.
PNC is my shit.
Problem is I have Smith & Wesson spelled different ways all over my computer. Just disgusting.
Some Coco Brothers in there.
And then, what the fuck, man? Why Coco Brothers?
They smoked a lot of weed, cocoa weed.
Why do you have to change the name? The gun company?
We got sued.
By the gun company?
Then you got to keep it.
We got sued by the gun company. And it's not a matter of did we get to keep it. It's just more that over time we saw people like Eminem, DMX, Timberland kind of getting away with a similar, you know, comparison of what we were going through. So it was contested, but we literally received like a 20-page cease and desist on every level, like saying they were making they had the belt buckle patent t-shirts. What they didn't have was music. So, you know, you could contest it, but those laws are very tricky. Copyright, you know, it's intricate of like what you got to go into. And they were an independent group on an independent label, meaning Nervous still at this time. They didn't have the money to fight it. And, you know, all parties just felt in when you get into a court legal situation, what happens is time, right? Like, even if you're in the right, you're still going to be held up for time.
Yeah.
And they didn't have time, so they just decided to go on and move from the name. Big mistake.
I'm a little upset.
For us, I was a part of that mistake.
What, you mean not continuing to fight it?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, it would have been much better and easier to come out with that second album under that same name.
Well, why isn't this loading? Oh, man, are none of these songs here? Oh, that's so upsetting.
They have a song called, I don't know the name of the song offhand, but the second album is called Rude Awakening, and the intro has Professor X on it. That's from the Rude Awakening. But they literally go into the whole lawsuit within the song. And for those Smith & Wesson fans that never got past The Shining, if you listen to the Rude Awakening, that the very first song like really
Well, first of all,
describes it.
First of all, people are idiots if they left after that, because there's some great moments. I tried to play one on one, wasn't there though. It wasn't my thing. So, if you love one on one, the one from Soul in the Hole,
Loud Records,
the Loud Record shit.
Yeah,
but also around that time,
Ralph McDaniels did the video. Syph left us already.
He's gone.
He's gone at this point. USA, it's the remix. I like it.
This shit.
He was working out. Now he's working for Pharrell at this point.
He's gone.
Yeah, he's out. You run them diamonds in them gems.
Get up in a pack. Keep carrots in check. What about this, Syph? What about this?
That's a shit.
ST, what I represent, NY, hold it down for my peeps in the village.
No troubles with this song?
We only put it on vinyl.
So no one gave a shit?
No one gave a shit. Sold a lot of vinyl on that record. Yeah.
What are some projects that you guys put out or singles you put out that might surprise us with the amount of... And by the way, for anyone who doesn't know that song, it's called Super Brooklyn, if you want to look for it.
Yeah, Super Brooklyn. I think, all of the projects actually... all did well. I mean, even when you get into OGC numbers, they were doing 180, 200, 250. So
OGC The Storm?
Yeah.
Oh my God. When you think about that comparatively, it makes no sense. This is the single. Guys, this is the single off of an artist who sold 200,000 copies. Listen. Like picturing this something like this selling like that.
Yeah, I can't find the song I love. Check it out.
I think they were at this point. I think they were. The industry was getting a little tired of us that we kept introducing the next group. And yo, honestly, like when you look back on it and I think about it, the stars aligned. I have 8 MCs or 7 MCs that really made music like that. I mean, obviously the Wu-Tang comparison is there, but these were all individual groups, and I think that was the big difference between them.
But they were very, all your groups were, I can see why people could get tired, because the sound was like,
it was all similar. It was all Evil Tang and Mr. Walt, right?
Even though it was the same producer, it was sounded very different for each solo.
You mean voice quality?
Both.
I know I'm so close to it, but I think Boot Camp voice quality, they all have very distinct voices and flows.
I think it was the music.
Music, I agree.
I think it was the music.
You think that they didn't... You didn't
step out into different producers until after that,
Right.
Yeah, and RZA...
some stuff.
And even RZA was, I do think, had a lot of other influences early when he was making those other albums. And there were other people who were getting involved.
Yeah. I was about to tell you to play this.
Here we go.
That's the Bad Boy Beef.
This is another one, right?
We had Bad Boy Beef, because of Total.
Right. They made us change the sample, so we did this for New Jersey Drive soundtrack.
So the original one is...
We turn it in. That is the remix.
Oh, the original was what I played?
The original never came out. The original is what you were playing, right? So we turn this in. 3 weeks later, the soundtrack, they accept it. They pay us. Everything is good. 3 weeks later, they come back and they say, we need you to change the record. And we're like, why do you need us to change the record?
Oh, they were both New Jersey.
They were both on the same soundtrack.
So they Puff Jack your shit?
We don't know what happened, but nobody was happy.
Oh, this used to come in. It was all filtered, 950 filtered, and then it dropped. 3, 2, 1, nice to know ya. You wanted to pop junks and I was like a little figure order. Hey. Man, you keep cutting shit off. You're a horrible DJ.
Sorry.
Give me all the chicken heads from Pasadena to Medina. Bet big me.
Much cleaner.
It's totally different.
Much brighter.
It's an R&B record. It's supposed to be.
I mean, I love how dark the...
I like Mr. Walt's remix, though. I know he never truly...
Well, he was probably always frustrated because this just didn't...
Nowadays, I had it up to here.
Fire.
From my chest to my head.
Okay. Louisville.
Bless my head, then the eyes are red. Coming for ya. 3, 2, 1, nice to know ya. You wanted to pop junks and I was like a little figure on the floor.
Ain't ready, grab the original guns and machetes. I pin that to the grass like I was Teddy. Cause brothers ain't ready.
Pen that ass, get it, Teddy? Pender ass?
Got it.
Enter the cipher.
So I've got to be the hashtag for this episode. Hashtag end of the cipher. Did this ever? This was on the Bootcamp Click album.
Yes, yo. This was on Helter Skelter's Nocturnal.
They ended up putting on Nocturnal. Ooh.
You know Sean didn't want it.
What? He didn't want it on the album.
Sean didn't. It was probably too. He didn't want it on the album.
You know what? Flex used to play.
Too happy for Sean.
You know what I heard? Too happy. This was. Because they were doing yes. They were doing yes, yes,
yeah,
y'all.
Yeah. Too happy.
He needed this.
punk yet.
Now, this beat got used around the same time, too.
Jermaine Dupri.
No, and Showbiz.
Yeah, Showbiz.
Well, I think we took it after him, though.
You did.
Yeah, that was Baby Paul at this point. Baby Paul of the Beat Miners.
Oh, this is now you're outside.
No, but Baby Paul was always one of the Beat Miners, but he was just kind of like the one you didn't hear too much about.
Oh, got it. So it was still all Beat Miners, but different people were taking. So over the years, you guys got to tour with a lot of different people. Is there one specific tour in those years that you thought were?
Give me the thing. Give me the music thing.
Mm-hmm. He wants the music thing.
Give me the thingy.
You gotta put it in fast. Pause.
Okay.
hurry. There you go.
This is my shit.
Ah, man. How do you even have
that? That's on YouTube.
I have it, though. I have a really good copy of it.
Also, never came out. Just the B-side. Couldn't clear the sample. Let's get it on. Stick them up. Word is fire. I had a meeting with Chris Lighty, and Lighty was like, if you bring that over here, we could clear it.
What do you mean, bring it over here?
He was trying to get us to come over to Def Jam.
Coco, to Smith & Wesson?
Everything. Everything we were doing. Like, you know, at those times, it was like, just take meetings and see what you can do.
And why didn't you do it?
It was a dumb move, man. I probably should have done it.
Why didn't you do it?
Because we had that independent mentality.
We
also had contracts, man.
Contract.
Right. They could have probably, Leor would have fixed that up, but.
Yeah, but sometimes it doesn't work out. Look what happened to CNN.
Exactly. Now I don't have any regrets that way, because I do know they would use you up and spit you out, and that would be the end of it. Pause. But yeah.
Who did you guys get closest with the guys that you went out with over the years
on tours? I mean, we usually did a lot of them ourselves. So,
yeah, I guess that's the thing about having a whole crew, right?
Yeah, we were cool with like the Alcoholics, Das Effects. We did a few tours with Das Effects. Always cool with Brand Nubian, with Sadat.
Even when Sadat would say weird, crazed things about Jews, or that's more Lord Jamar.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I stayed away from that.
He just ignored it. I'm sure, you know what, let's be honest, Joel, let's call it what it is. Over the late 80s, early 90s, you probably spent a lot of time ignoring weird things said about Jews. Is that true? Would you say that?
Absolutely. Or I would think in my mind that there was a reason why they were saying it that was probably, you know, justifiable in their minds.
Right, but they didn't realize that saying it, like, that making it, like any racism, making a blanket statement about anyone is not cool.
Right. But I would take that position. I would say there were people that I would come across all the time that did
like,
not
that's
even,
why you feel that way.
They didn't like white people. Like I would go around, and this is a lot, you know, Buck was heavy in the Nation. Like he was heavy in the 5% teachings. A lot of these guys were, and I was viewed as the devil to them. Like blatantly, a couple of their friends would come, but then I would, you know, I would turn it into kind of, I would joke around with Buck and be in these situations where I've gotten comfortable enough with him. Where I'd, you know, be in these situations like the Larry going, I'm the devil, like, here I am. You know, like, not knowing else how to address it, but with some type of comedy or joke. Obviously, you can never say that's a joke to them, but...
But in terms of
that situations,
part.
Yeah, you, like, just try to add some humor to it and then try to understand from that.
And how do you guys do right now? Like, how do things work with the vintage boot camp artists? I mean, you have your own stuff, you work... Multiple places, you work with brands a lot, but in terms of the work with Black Moon, Smith & Wesson, Helta Skelta, where do you focus the most attention? Who does the most work out of the crew?
You know, that's probably one of the things I'm most proud of is that it's 20 years late. It's our 20-year anniversary, and that I'm still in business with all of these guys without any sets of contracts and all types of complicated paperwork. It's the business is still open to them. Duckdown still operates as an indie label. Obviously, the model of the music industry has changed so much. Like, what's out there for them is so different. But they're all open at any time to do projects and do things that we come up with creatively. We had to like reinvent over the years. I think, you know, a lot of people know the name Helta Skelta, and they don't even know that Sean Price is one half of Helta Skelta.
Mm-hmm.
Sean's gone on to like make an incredible independent solo career for himself. So he's been extremely active. Buck went on and made 3 albums with producer Ninth Wonder. Those became like their own following, like being able to tap into the little brother vibe at that
time.
Yeah,
in Europe and things like that, of course.
Yeah, man. And Smith & Wesson made a whole album with Pete Rock. KRS-One and Buck made a whole album together.
That's right.
Like, we became conscious of what we could do to make it a little bit different, to you know, not just hold on to 1993, 1994. And that's what's been, you know, unique about us. Like people, you said what people may not know or realize from us is that, yeah, we're still actively putting out a lot of albums every year from a lot of different artists. And it stems from Boot Camp and from this being the birth of all of it back in 93, 94, and 95.
And also, what is the date of that barbecue? People want to come out and...
June 11th.
People want to come hang out with the entire Duck Down Boot Camp family. You should come on out. It's next week.
It's June 11th. It's free. It's from
2 weeks.
6 to 9.
No, you're good in
next
Brownsville?
Thursday. I'm good in Brownsville most of the time.
Walk around, no problem.
I didn't say, no. If I'm with Sean Price, I'm good.
I mean, if I'm with Sean Price, I'm good.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say I walk around no problem because you can always have a problem.
I mean, that's regardless. I'm just talking about, like, there's a lot of people that know you.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that don't.
But can you walk around? Would you go there by yourself?
To do what?
He's such a New Yorker. For what? Yeah, what the fuck is he going there for?
What am I going out there for? I go to Sean's house. I call him if I'm downstairs.
I apologize.
Know? For asking something so stupid?
Yeah.
Like, what was
the perfect...
That was such a wad-up response, too. Hey, Drew, thanks a lot, man, for coming through and hanging out with us.
Oh, man, I'm honored and humbled to be on here.
You, like I've said, you've been great to us, been great to hip-hop. I've always thought it was very cool that you guys have lasted so long. And you see so many, like, duos and groups that you just never thought would break up always did. So it's always been very cool to see how well you guys have done.
Man, I appreciate it. You know, we just keep going and try to, like, contribute wherever we can.
And if you're listening right now to Juan Epp and you're in a somewhat younger audience member and you don't have, at the very least...
Enter the Stage.
And The Shining.
Well, this came from somebody saying last week on our... on Twitter or whatever, asking us how come we don't represent Duck Down.
Yeah. No, wow. So we're gonna get everybody in. I'm gonna make sure we get Buckshot soon. I thought about having you guys together.
No.
Seif made a great point, which is that since you're a fucking pro, he's like, let's not have Drew with them because Drew will fall back if they're here. Because he knows his role. That's what he does.
Right.
And we wanted to be like, no, we want to have Drew on the story.
You also wanted to be and start on time. So this was like a very easy way.
To get the first one done?
Those guys are always on
the
bridge.
No, I'm going to lie to Buckshot by two. They're always on the bridge. That's a
they're
great.
They're on the bridge. You call your
That is a great fucking
yo,
line.
Where the fuck are you
on
at?
On the bridge.
The
I'm on the bridge.
I'm almost there. I'm on the bridge.
10 minutes.
I'm on the bridge. The worst thing I could possibly hear. Because then you know how much traffic there is. From, and they're not on the bridge.
And they're not on the bridge.
They're not even on the bridge.
If you said on the bridge. Because you know what? You're not going to say, the truth is you're not going to say I'm still in Brooklyn.
Because, no.
You're not going to admit you're still in Brooklyn, so you have to say on the bridge. So you're probably just still in Brooklyn.
You ever thought about just following them? Like, going to their house, right? At the time they're supposed to leave. Like, they're supposed to leave at 3,
what the
4 o'clock.
What are you doing?
Go
I've seen it, though.
I wonder if you could just be under... Yeah, but even with you around, it might even be a little extra pep. Like, if you're not around, go undercover in a fucking...
Tell them what time they have to be somewhere.
And then you say, all right, what time are you leaving? They're like, I'm leaving at 2. And you go in front of the house at 1:30
and just start
and just
watching.
Fucking watch. You'd fucking have a ball.
Sean Price is on time. Sean Price
really?
Is on time. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
He's the one.
He's the one. He's on time.
Buckshot to this day, still not.
Buckshot is the worst.
That's so funny, too, because he's also
the best and he's the worst.
That is amazing. Hey, by the way, one more shout out to our friends at squarespace.com. Make sure you head out to Squarespace.
Squarespace.
I told you it's an amazing website where you can build things beautifully.
You need a team of like 40 engineers.
Sorry, if you already we already talked about that. No, Squarespace, in fact, is trusted by millions. All right. And it starts at $8 a month. And if you sign up for a year, you get a free domain. $8 a month and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year. That is crazy. I'm literally reading this right now. That is insane. So, anyways, go start your free trial today. No credit card required. It's at squarespace.com and use that code JuanEpp. Site's going to look amazing. Hey, Drew, you're the man.
Can I get some shameless plugs?
Of course. Go ahead.
Right, please.
So I'm
Shameful.
Telling you, the barbecue, right? And then
June 11th.
You can see some of our new artists because I think that's important that we continually put out new artists and give them a chance. So we're working with an artist out of Toronto named Raz Fresco.
Yes.
Who I've been telling you about for
that's
a minute.
Right.
He wants to meet you.
I'm looking forward to it.
A female named Chelsea Reject.
I've heard of Chelsea Reject also.
Cypher's favorite, Young M.A., who I showed him the video and it scared the shit out of him.
Wait, when did you show it to me?
I sent you the link.
And I
sent it to you and Drewski and you said, yo, that was
Oh yeah, yeah.
Young M.A.
She was dope, though.
She's incredible.
She's fucking scary.
Yeah.
She's going to be there, too?
She's going to be there also.
Oh.
Remember that name. That's what she says in the record, Young M.A. She's got a video out right now that has...
Say her name again.
Young M.A.
Young M.A.
Don't call her Young Ma, like a bunch of the guys did at Webster Hall house party when she came out with Flex. They were like, Young Ma, and she was like, no, 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 it's Young M.A.
That's hard.
Well, don't get mad if people call you Young Ma by when accident.
Right. No, you got
Young
letters, okay?
Period A.
I would never say that to her face, though.
No, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't. Have you seen that video?
No, I'm going to go watch it.
Yo, my man. You have to watch it right now. You made me watch some bullshit last week.
I want
to
see your reaction to this video.
Dial it up.
1.8 million views already.
Really?
Ugh. Yeah, man.
It's, ugh.
And I have to be clear, when she's not signed to us, we did a partnership with her. So we're going to be distributing and marketing her music. But she has her own label and her own, you know, groups and things that are coming out from it. But we're really excited about that.
I normally don't like anything that looks or resembles what that whole video looked like. But because it was Drew.
You looked.
I listened to it and I watched it and I was like, fuck.
We're going to watch it after we sign off.
All right, I'm going to watch this. Young M.A.
Young M.A.
Well, that's a good plug, guys. I got to be honest. Yeah, I'm interested.
June 11th. We'll see it.
All right. Hey, guys. Good night. Good luck.
What the fuck are you saying?
I made up a new...
We don't have a goodbye?
Oh, yeah. That's right. And I'm going to be in London on Thursday night at XOYO in London. And I'll be at the Boom Bap Festival on Friday in Bumblefuck. Outside London. And Syfe, next week, guess what? I'm announcing Peter Palooza, and guys, Syfe Sounds will not be appearing at Peter Palooza.
No.
And he's not showing up unless I give him minimum. How many passes?
Six.
All right, we're out.